pushing the limits safely. This is Aviator Cast, episode 112.
Calling all aviators, you've landed at Aviator Cast, the top podcast resource for interviews, refreshers, lessons, training topics, and more. Join weekly and share in our passion for flying things, exploring the rare air through flight. And now, another episode. Pre-flight complete, fuel on board, and flight plan filed. Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Here's your host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer. Each aviator at one time faces him or herself and has to ask, what are you made of? Speaking to oneself, you'll ask questions like, are you going to risk too much to complete the mission? Do you have enough guts to turn back rather than keep going? Are you made of the right stuff? It's in those moments we find out who we really are as aviators. The safe decisions we make will result in safe outcomes. Unsafe decisions sometimes result in safe outcomes, but then there are those times that it doesn't. In other words, it's the constant practice of safety and fighting against our more daring and risky selves that determines our ultimate longevity as aviators, as pilots. Make safe decisions, be aware of yourself, and always come home to your family and friends. That's the golden rule. So welcome to this, the 112th episode of Aviator Cast. It is my pleasure to be here. It is my pleasure to speak to you, my friends, my colleagues, my fellow aviators out there in the world. You're out there doing it. You're out there at least striving to do it, or one form or another. As always, Aviator Cast is brought to you by Aviator Training by Angle of Attack, offering online ground school wherever you are and flight training in Alaska. Get our Guide to the Sky video series with 3 hours of free getting started advice and steps. Turn your aviation passion into reality. Sign up today at aviatortraining.com. For those of you that haven't been here before, this is a podcast for all aviators, whether you're aspiring and working on getting there, or new pilots that are just newly minted looking to continue to grow, or old-time pilots that like a different perspective on aviation and like to hear from different people, or maybe you're even an airline pilot that wants to connect back to general aviation. And of course, we have the rusty pilots out there that haven't been flying for a while. We all come from different walks of life. We've all been in and out of flying here and there. And this is a place where you can get a little bit of information, a whole lot of passion, and hopefully also a good amount of inspiration. That's what we do here, and hope that you guys continue to enjoy that. So this last weekend, I went to the Valdez Stoll competition and fly-in. And I was able to meet a lot of you there, and it was really great to be able to link up with some of you fans of the show and get to hear what you like about the show and more things that you want to see coming. You know, it's inspired me to work harder at releasing these episodes more frequently. I've just been so busy with my own career path that I've let you guys down in a way over the last several months and haven't posted as frequently as I've wanted to, but I'm really eager and excited about making this more of a regular thing. So to do that, what's a little bit easier is for me to just share some recent experiences and lessons that I'm learning as an instructor and flying here in Alaska on and sharing those with you, okay? So it may not be so much of the whole interview thing, which we do quite a bit. I really enjoy doing those interviews. You're going to see more of the type of episode we're going to have today, which is sharing with you my thoughts, some ideas, some knowledge on things that you can keep in mind and maybe add to your toolbox as an aviator. So that's what we're going to go with today. We're going to talk about my experience getting to Valdez. We're going to talk about my experience there and coming back. And I call this the battle for Valdez because it certainly was a battle. Took me to my limits as an aviator, and I hope that through some of the stories that I have to share, that you guys will be inspired or have maybe a different outlook or, again, another tool in your toolbox. For those of you that have been to AviatorCast before, you know that I always read a review on the show. And I have a really interesting one today, and I'm going to do something a little bit different here. Now, if I read your review, I will send you an AviatorCast t-shirt, usually a pretty cool t-shirt that you guys can wear, that you can have for free just by leaving a review on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, somewhere where this podcast is broadcast, many different apps out there to get it. And if I read your review, I will send you a shirt, and I will even send a shirt to this person, okay? So this is a one-star review, and it comes from Apple Podcasts. It comes from Gummy747 from Iceland, and he or she says, "Too much unnecessary talk about nothing could summarize this episode into 2 minutes." So do you guys agree with that? Do you disagree with it? Also, Gummy747, if you are a listener still, I don't know, it seems you're a little unhappy, then I'll still send you a t-shirt if you write me at me@aviatorcast.com. Give me some ideas on how I can improve the show. And if you disagree with this, you other listeners out there, if you disagree with this review, go ahead and leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, again, Stitcher, lots of different ones out there. I think we recently got an iHeartRadio. Just some different places to review, and I will send you a t-shirt. So thanks, Gummy747, for the honesty or grumpiness, whatever you want to call it, but I'd still like to send you a t-shirt if you give me some good feedback. So that is it for the opening of the show here. Now we are going to get into the experience going to Valdez and the battle for Valdez. So truth be told, I am tired. I'm exhausted. I don't really feel like flying right now. I'm excited to take a break. I need a break for at least a few days here as I recover from the Valdez fly-in, getting there and back, and also how busy it was there. Now, that's not to say that it wasn't an absolute blast, because this is my favorite air show, to be quite honest. Out of all the air shows I go to between Oshkosh, Sun and Fun, and a few others I get to attend, I look forward the most to Valdez because it's such a great family atmosphere. I just started saying this year that it's like the family reunion, and I truly feel that way and had an absolute great time reconnecting with my friends, making new friends, seeing and meeting some of you out there that are listeners or engage in the content that I produce through AviatorCast, Angle of Attack, or Aviator Training. And all things considered, it's a great time, but I am exhausted. So I go to Valdez for that family reunion, but over the last several years, because of my background in media and the things that I'm able to do, I've achieved more of an official position. So last year we did a live stream of the event with just an iPad. I was kind of asked to do that last second, and it went really well. So this year my goal was to do the live stream with multiple cameras, have it really nice and professional, and also get some sponsors on board. So I ended up gaining more of an official position there and a job in a sense that I had to accomplish at Valdez. So it wasn't any more about just fun, but I had to be there. I was required to be there. And so I was going to get there no matter what. Now, when it comes to aviation decision-making, that's not a great position to be in, because when you have to be somewhere, you get into what is called get there-itis, and then some problems start to arise. And so already being fully aware of this, I took out a window of time that I knew I needed to be to the show. So the show, for the most part, starts on Saturday, but there are some events on Friday night. So my window of opportunity to go was going to be Thursday night to Friday morning timeframe. So that's kind of what we were looking at. Otherwise, we were obligated to drive the route. Again, it's never a good idea to be so locked into time that you have to make a flying decision. I find that a lot of people make poor decisions when that is the case. So I was very aware of that from the get-go. Now, with that window of time, we also had some weather challenges that have been happening. Winter has really clung on here in Alaska. I don't fully know why. You know, as we all know, Mother Nature goes through its cycles, and it's just still really cold and rainy and cloudy. And in the area that you have to fly through from Homer, going over through Prince William Sound and into Valdez, it is quite unforgiving and is already known for being a wet and rainy area. So with those time challenges, with the weather challenges, we couldn't quite get into our window to get over there. But it finally opened up a little bit. I woke up in the morning. I saw that the forecasts were better than expected. I looked out the window, said, okay, we got a clear shot. I see it. My big goal is to get over the mountains, and then we can get lower along the coastline, and that's totally acceptable. And so we started to mobilize, you know, get the baby and have the wife get ready to get all the stuff together, and put it all in the airplane with me, my wife, the baby, and my friend Eric, and fly to Valdez. So we started to go through this process. It was 10 a.m. when I saw that good weather. And then by the time we actually got to the airport, it was about noon, and it was gradually getting worse. So we took off out of Homer and headed on our way to Valdez, this very important event that I needed to be to. And we were max gross weight. We were climbing out in a 145 horsepower 172 and trying to climb up to get over the mountains, to get over the weather, to get over to where we could descend lower and work the coastline into Valdez. As we climbed up, however, it didn't look like we had a great path to get through. It was very tempting because you could kind of see an area where we could work through, you know, a large cloud here and a low cloud there and another cloud on the right-hand side and kind of a gap that we could go through to get there. But we also couldn't climb any higher. I wanted to be higher than 8,000 feet, and the airplane at max gross in this particular craft would just not climb any higher. And so we were looking at these mountains, circling back and forth, burning fuel, burning time, and realized that, okay, we're not going to be able to go over the mountains. So can we go through them? So we started to go through this area called Cooper Landing, which is a little bit lower. If you want to look up the airport on your chart, you can look up Juliet Lima Alpha is one of the airports in there. And then you can look up Seward, which is Papa Alpha Whiskey Delta. If you want to look that up on your computer or on your ForeFlight, you can look that up. So then we started to go that route to descend down, to go lower, to go into Seward and along the coastline that way. However, then things got worse. So as we started to come around the corner into the canyon, the gap to go into Seward, to descend lower, to get in there, the turbulence got worse. So we were facing more updrafts and downdrafts and just generally uncomfortable for my not so experienced passengers in the back with my wife and my baby. So that was already a challenge. And then we came up to a decision point. Okay. We'd already been in the air about an hour at this point. And we came up to this point where there's this canyon that's going from where we were to Seward, and it's only about 4 miles long, this Valley Canyon, and I knew that it was just right there. However, there was a white wall of mist, of rain, that was right there, and I couldn't quite see through. If I was going to get through, I had to descend lower, had to go at the bottom of the valley, and had to go on to Seward. It was already uncomfortable. We'd already burned a lot of fuel, and I was just so frustrated because I knew it was right there and I could get there and that it would work out, right? Well, that's the devil on my shoulder talking. The angel on my shoulder was saying, hey, this is how people get in trouble. This is how things go wrong. And you've already burned a lot of fuel. Your family's already uncomfortable in the back. Your original plan didn't work. And now there's a domino effect building here. And it's so frustrating to look at that and say, okay, I know it's just on the other side. I know I can get to the airport and say, we're not going to do it, and turn around and start to work our way back. So that's exactly what we did. We, uh, I was very frustrated and grumpy and not in a general state of happiness. And we just decided to turn around and go back and regroup. So we worked our way back to Homer, still, again, a fairly uncomfortable with the turbulence and everything closing in, and went into Homer. You know, we were staying legal the entire time. Everything was good with cloud clearances and everything, but it just seemed, I don't know, things just didn't seem right. You know, there are too many things building against us, that maybe can point out a couple of them that just didn't seem to work. So already very tired, frustrated, you know, defeated. We worked our way back to Homer. We landed there. We kind of regrouped and thought about the next step. Again, we had to be at this competition, at this fly-in for the job I had to do. So we had kind of a zero hour. It was 6 p.m. You know, at that point, between the three of us driving, we could drive through the night. It's a 10-hour drive. We could get there by driving at that time. If the weather hadn't improved by that point, if we didn't find a flight plan that could be executed safely by that point, then we needed to start the drive. So as we worked through many different scenarios of going north, of going through Portage, of going through Seward again, trying that, we ended up with the plan of going all the way around on the coastline and staying below the cloud layers and working our way along the coastline. So as we continue to look at the aviation weather cameras that we have here in Alaska in the different locations along our route and looking at, you know, the TAS and METARs and everything else, a whole lot of information, satellite imagery, radar, we were perusing through it all. We decided that that was going to be an effort that was worth approaching if we approached it safely and if we had some hard and fast rules and some backup. So what ended up happening is we decided to make an attempt to do this second flight. We're going to go along the coastline all the way around through around Homer, around the Kenai Mountains, along the coastline, and then we'd have to climb at certain times or go into some bays at certain times to stay within gliding distance and work our way through there. Everything looked good. The weather opened up just enough for it to make sense for us. And so we decided that as a group, we were going to do it. So it would not only be the original flight with Chelsea and I and Apollo, my boy, and my friend Eric, but it'd also be my friends Daniel and Mauricio in another 172. And we'd be flying loosely together in loose formation, basically within eyesight of each other, and we'd work our way over there. Had some golden rules for doing this, okay? So we decided that we were not going to ever do IMC or instrument conditions. That didn't make sense at all with where we were at and what we were working with, and so that was my rule. Another rule was always within gliding distance. Also stay legal at all times within the cloud clearances and visibility. Never separate from each other. So we'd always have each other in sight and we'd never make any decisions against each other, basically. So we had two airplanes, four pilots, and we decided that we had enough in our favor, enough safety in our favor, enough options in our favor to go for this route. So we did a nice pre-flight briefing together. We all agreed on these rules. We all decided together on the plan, talked about anything that needed to be done differently or what we would do in certain scenarios if we couldn't continue on because of weather, where the alternate courses of action would be, where we would land, and had a lot of discussion along those lines. So then we went for it. So the wind was blowing from south to north, and we were flying to the basically southern coast just outside of Homer where we'd be on the Pacific side of the ocean. So the turbulence that we'd been feeling was mostly caused by the mountains and the surface friction that was mixing everything up, blowing in from the Pacific Ocean and mixing that up over the top into our area. So as we got on the Pacific side, things calmed down quite a bit. You know, the winds were steady, but it wasn't turbulent like it had been the rest of the day and therefore exhausting that way. We worked our way through with ceilings here and there that we had to work with, but we stayed within gliding distance of all the shorelines that we could reach. And then just kind of, you know, by miracle, anytime that we needed to climb up higher to go over a larger body of water and stay within gliding distance, it always seemed to work out. I almost think that the wind blowing from south to north was creating some sort of upslope condensation of the moisture going over those mountains. And that was what was causing most of the weather, because even just a short distance off the coast and in some of these larger bays, the weather would open up to fairly high ceilings, like 5,000 feet. And so we'd be able to climb higher to get over those parts. So all things considered, ceiling wise and gliding distance wise, it went really well. It was a beautiful coastline, bright blue water, you know, of course, some weather involved, but we saw mountain goats along the entire way, several hundred altogether, just a group after group of mountain goats everywhere. We also saw this really cool phenomenon I've never seen before, and it was like a black hole into oblivion. So there was these really white, soft, stretched out clouds that were kind of whipped over the top of these peaks. It almost looked like Donald Trump's hair, okay? So it was whipped over the tops of these peaks, but we passed at this one point where all of that was being sucked into this valley, and there was this black hole, or rather this hole into a new universe, almost like the closet in Narnia, into this area in the back where you could see these peaks in the background. But it was only this one hole that was kind of cut out of the clouds, just really beautiful. And just went really well. Saw a lot of beautiful things, definitely had its challenges. You know, it was a very busy and active type of flying because we were always thinking about places to land. We were always looking ahead to the next decision, the next step, the next place we were going to be, what the best course of action was based on the conditions we were seeing. And then working through that as a group, and it was working pretty well. So also thinking through the different possible outcomes. And then I, being the most experienced pilot in the group, was the leader. And I was, I kind of took on that role unofficially in guiding everyone through and in having group discussions. We were talking on the radio together over the air and just making good decisions along the way. I always wanted to be safe and keep those golden rules. So one of the reasons we needed to leave by 6 p.m. is it gave us buffer for any other course of action where we could land before it got dark. So we ended up making a safe journey, fairly uneventful other than the challenges we had to deal with. And we ended up landing in Valdez and just went really well. We approached the city, a little light rain, but this big, bright Christmas tree runway, just light, right lined up with us, calm winds, just beautiful, and just felt so rewarding after a very long flight. Eric said that with all the challenges we had faced, you know, it being a bit beyond his abilities if he was to do it alone, said it was the most rewarding flight that he had ever done to see that big runway there and to be at the end. And then, of course, we met our family, our friends, at the end and saw many smiling faces that welcomed us on the ground there in Valdez. And so that was our trip to Valdez, a very exhaustive effort with the first failed attempt earlier on in the day. And then later on in the day, this second attempt after a lot of planning to get in there and do it safely with the way we did it. I am convinced that we had, from our position in Alaska, the only way to get into Valdez, other than if you were already in Prince William Sound. I'm convinced that we had the only way in there, the only possible option, because everywhere else, we looked at every possible option. Everywhere else, the weather was closed off, and a lot of pilots hadn't showed up by the time we got there. So I'm convinced that it was something unique to Homer and our ability to follow the coastline all the way around to get there, where it wouldn't be possible to get there any other way. So that is what happened getting there. So then I stayed up till 2:30 in the morning preparing for the next day after an already very long and exhaustive day, offloading footage and charging batteries and getting prepared for the live stream that I'd be doing the next day. Ran into a lot of wonderful people at the show. You know, again, that's always the first thing on my mind when I think of Valdez is the people. Got people that really enjoyed the YouTube show, the Angle of Attack show, and just, you know, met up with some of them that really enjoyed that content, some podcast listeners. And I seem to be meeting more and more Instagram followers since I'm fairly active on there. Got to meet up with a lot of you. It was great to see you there. And again, it's the people that really matter here. And just step after step, everyone really made this happen. It wasn't just me. So the live stream was a little bit stressful getting that all set up. You know, I really wanted to be at the show earlier so I could get a lay of the land and find out what our challenges would be. Had to make sure we were within internet coverage. And although we did a little bit of pre-planning there, I still had to fill things out when I got there. So it was a bit of a rush to have to do that all Saturday morning before the show. And it was stressful, but we figured it out. We had people helping us at all angles with audio, with getting us a tent, a table, the internet connection, and everything ended up working out really well. And we were able to live stream that event on the Valdez Fly-In Facebook page. So if you want to go see that, I'll put links to it in the show notes on this episode. You can go to aviatorcast.com and find this episode, episode 112, and see that. But it was a great time, a great competition. You can see how unique this air show and STOL competition is from anything else that you've ever seen before. It's very competitive, but also very friendly. And you have a lot of quite experienced bush pilots that are competing against each other. I often joke when I tell other people what this show is all about, I often tell them that it's like a rodeo. You know, everyone's showing up and they're off the streets and they're just competing against each other. And it's a whole lot of fun. So go there and see some of the competition. You'll see just how amazing it is. I mean, we're talking Cessna 172s and 170s and such that at least in that specific group, that with a combined takeoff and landing distance, which is what they score people on, we're talking sub 200 feet. It's amazing what these guys are able to do. Of course, there's other classes like the heavy touring where you'll get the 185s and the 180s. And there was an L-19 there this year, which is a really cool airplane. You got the Bush class with the Super Cubs and the alternate Bush class with some of these smaller airplanes that did a great job. So had a really cool competition, saw some amazing things, some amazing skill. I'd love to compete in it one day. And maybe I can do that when the stream isn't so busy. Other than that, you know, intermingling with the crowd and the vendors there and the good food that's there is just a whole lot of fun. They had a banquet and awards dinner later on that night that went off very well. They had it at a different location this year in the town of Valdez at their civic center and just went really well. Met some new people, hung out with friends, had good laughs. And after the dinner, you know, it's kind of the crowning moment of the day. A bunch of us friends from Instagram, actually, which we've all become fairly decent friends. We're not just the type to write people on messages, but, you know, where I open my home to them and have them over and, you know, they're always welcome. And we spend a lot of quality time together. We had this moment after the banquet where we went to the hilltop just on the other side of the Civic Center, and the clouds had cleared, and it's this beautiful clear night, 10:30 p.m. with the fresh snow on the mountains right there in Valdez, and we all just had a good time bantering back and forth and having some laughs and taking some pictures, and it's just a really great moment. Again, that's what the show is all about those people and that experience. Now, the weather was so good at that point that I really could have flown home that night. But with how busy I'd been the day before, with how busy I'd been that day, I was just too exhausted. There was no way I was going to be able to fly back that night. And so I decided not to. I decided to stay there and spend some extra time with people and get a long night's rest on Saturday night, which did end up happening. So now the next day, there's a little bit of air show stuff. There, you know, it's more local stuff like a balloon pop and a flower drop and the aerobatic performers perform again. And some other cool things, but it's not, you know, the big event like the Stoll competition. So it was a little more relaxed. We didn't do a live stream of that, hung out with people. And I plan on going earlier in the morning flying over. But as I got talking to some of my other friends that were going to be going later that day, I decided that it would be safer for me to go back with them and follow their experience than it would be to go by myself and go back through, because the weather had come down a little bit from the night before to then. So I decided to wait it out, to wait for the weather to actually worsen a little bit, keeping in mind that being with them and relying on their experience would bring my safety factor up even higher than even being alone. So I waited until early afternoon, about 1:30 p.m., which is when we decided to go. I went with my friends, Sean Holly and Terry Goads, and we went together kind of as a flight of three. Sean was a little bit ahead, Terry and I, but we followed the coastline through Prince William Sound and went to a different area that I hadn't crossed before that Terry was very familiar with, and we were able to pop through there. I'd kayaked in that area before, so I knew the location, but I'd never flown through that area before. So we kind of played a little bit of follow the leader. I ended up linking up. I could talk to Terry on the radio most of the way, but I couldn't see him most of the way. But I, you know, my personal minimums were that I had to see him to go through the main part where it would be passing over. So we went over what's called a saddle, which is basically a little bit of a higher ridge between two peaks that will get you over into another valley. And so he knew that. He was familiar with it. Sean had gone through it up ahead, and we talked to him on the radio about it. And then Terry and I linked up and went over together. And it was a very good way to do it. They were very respectful of my personal limits, making sure that I was good along the way. I kind of wonder if I sound like a child sometimes going through with these guys, because they've just been through it so many times. But having not experienced a lot of this type of flying, I wanted to make sure that that I was just safe and that I had a buddy with me, and all of that was great. And they just took really good care of me, and I really appreciate them doing that. So then we popped over there. The weather improved dramatically. And through kind of the area where initially through Cooper Landing and through Seward, where the weather was bad, the weather had improved quite a bit. And from there, it was smooth sailing on down to Homer, split off with Terry around Skelak Lake and headed on home, got home. A little funny, Chelsea got out of the airplane and laid on the ground, just, you know, spread eagle, and just laid there exhausted and ready to be on terra firma, ready to be on earth again. You know, she didn't go as far as to kiss the ground when she got out of the airplane. But for her, what she was experiencing was very stressful, because it was flying on the edge, or at least a different type of flying than her and I had done before. It was a very active type of flying. You know, we're not at 6,000 feet and just cruising clear skies of somewhere. We're actively weaving through areas, working with lower ceilings, working with gliding distance, constantly communicating with each other, with the, you know, the other pilots. And so for her, not knowing a lot about aviation, it was a little difficult. I tried to talk her through that as much as I could to keep her comfortable, but knew that, you know, I kept her in the loop on my golden rules and the fact that we are never going to be with outside gliding distance. We're never going to do anything that was inherently unsafe. So that is the whole experience. We finally got home after all that in just those 48 hours. I was exhausted. It all happened within 48 hours, and I was just really beat. It's only now, I'm recording this on Wednesday, it's only now after a long night's sleep last night that I feel like a normal person. You know, the first night we were back,
my dog had diarrhea. So I was up every half hour, swapping back and forth with Chelsea, up every half hour, letting her outside, the dog outside. So that didn't help. Anyway, I'm exhausted. I'm excited to be at the office for a few days recording something like this podcast. And overall, just had a fantastic time. Things went really well with the live stream, which I'm happy for Valdez in that case, because I think this is an air show and a competition that deserves a lot more credit than it's due, but it does get some good credit. So that went really well. And I was so happy to see my friends and spend time with them and have a lot of thoughts and ideas on how to improve things next time, how to get there earlier next time, have it be less stressful, and overall just improve what happened. So this brings up the lessons learned, and I have a handful of those here that I want to discuss briefly to kind of just pick out some things that I learned from this experience, because there were so many lessons to be learned. You know, it was a great experience, first of all, the type of flying we did, but it's also something that I don't think should be taken lightly. I don't think people should be flying like this every single day. I think it should be approached very carefully. I also told my friend that went along with us, Daniel, I said, hey, it may have worked this time, but you know, this is something that has to be approached on a case-by-case basis, whether or not it can be done. And you just have to be really, really careful and not try to get away with something that is dangerous. Now, I'm not saying that what we did was inherently dangerous, but it definitely did have some more risk involved, which is why we went through so much more planning and some rigid rules and things that said, hey, there are certain things we cannot and will not do, and here are our alternates, and here are things we need to do. So it's just a different type of flying that you have to be more cautious with and more on your guard. So lessons learned. Never get in a situation you can't get out of, and always leave an out. And so this goes back to where I came up against that white wall, okay? That white wall of mist and rain going in the Seward, where it seemed like I could get in there, but if I got in there, I wouldn't have had an out. And I knew that. And so I decided not to do it. I had an out at that time and decided to kind of break the domino effect if there was one. You know, I'll never know what the ultimate outcome would have been if I would have decided to go through there. Maybe I would have got away with it, but I don't know that. I had an out. I had the opportunity to exercise that, and so I did. So again, never get in a situation you can't get out of. Always leave an out. The next one, there is safety in numbers as long as there are rules. And so, you know, I think the safety in numbers thing really played well for me this time. This isn't something I usually do in flying with a group, but in the particular cases that I did, it ended up working really well. Now, honestly, I think this can go the other direction. I think you can end up getting in a group of pilots where there's some peer pressure to do things that you shouldn't be doing. So I think it's important to keep in mind that while there is safety in numbers, there can also be danger in numbers too. But overall, in this flight, I experienced that safety in numbers. Again, I appreciate Daniel and Mauricio being there on the first flight and Eric flying with me on that airplane, helping me work through it. And then Terry and Sean on that other flight. I just really appreciate all they did and their safety conscious effort to make this happen. Okay. The next one, rely on other experienced pilots that really know what they're doing. So I know Sean and Terry quite well. I've flown with Terry quite a bit, and Sean and Terry have flown together quite a bit. And I know them both to be very safe pilots and guys that wouldn't do anything inherently dangerous. They are experienced pilots. They've been through things, they've seen things, and so their ability to do things that maybe some other inexperienced pilots couldn't do is higher. In other words, like what we did going through that pass and flying in some lower ceilings, I felt good leaning on their experience. But I don't think that you should lean on others' experience unless you really know them. So just because a guy has 10,000 hours or 20,000 hours unless you really know that person and really know that they gained that experience by being a safety conscious pilot, don't rely on their experience. Again, that's just for people that you know very well. The next one, always be aware of your I'm safe checklist. So I'm safe checklist is something that we use as pilots as a precursor to flying. Just really quickly, it's an acronym or a mnemonic. It's illness, medication, stress. Alcohol. I don't drink alcohol, so I never remember that one. Alcohol. F is fatigue, and E is external pressures. So it's okay to have, for the most part, one or partially two of these, except for the case of alcohol and medication. There are some medications that are just a no-go. But when you start getting multiple things in the I'm safe checklist that are working against you, you really need to think about not going. So one of the places I exercised this I'm safe checklist was the night where the weather was really good. Saturday night, the weather was great getting back to Homer, climbing high and doing it fairly easily. But I was exhausted and I would be alone with my family doing that flight. And I just didn't feel that great doing it. I knew that I wouldn't be on my game to do that. So I decided to wait it out. And then E, external pressures, we faced that quite a bit. And I mitigated that by being very committed, very, very committed to driving if I had to, if this wasn't going to work out. So it literally came down to the minute where we were going to decide to do one thing or the other. And it looked good to fly. So we decided to do that. All right, the next one. This is one you hear quite a bit in aviation. It's a little funny, but it's definitely true. With time to spare, go by air. So that goes to the external pressures. I definitely plan on building more time to get into Valdez next week. I plan on having a window closer, or rather further away from the event, in which I'll make my go, no, go decision. And I'm also going to have a window to fly within that week time frame where I can pick the good weather within a week to get over there. Otherwise, I'm just going to drive. I don't need to fly over there. So that's going to be my rule for next year. The next one, watch closely for the domino effect. So you need to be very careful and think creatively about what could happen with the decisions that you're making and how that could cascade down into something that is unsatisfactory, unsafe, dangerous, whatever you want to call it, an outcome that you do not want to be in, or a position that you would be in that would stretch you beyond your limits as a pilot. And I knew that in some of these situations, like again, that white wall of mist that I faced, that it was going to stretch me and my airplane and my passengers beyond the limit. One of those is a no-go. And so it was, I definitely had to make that decision. I decided to break that domino effect. Again, I'll never know why or if anything would have happened, but I know that what happened, I knew that I had the ultimate choice to make a positive outcome happen. So that's what I did. And that's what we executed on our second flight as well, making sure that we had a positive outcome at every single step. Okay, be brutally honest about your limitations. So as I looked into this, as I look back here, I realized that I, as if you want to call me an experienced pilot, I may seem like an experienced pilot to some of you, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm actually not. I realized that I had come up against my limits, or at least I was one poor decision away from going beyond my limits. So we need to be brutally honest about our own limitations and know that even with experience and different ratings and flying a lot and all these different things, that we cannot do everything, that the hazardous attitudes that are so prevalent in each one of us and come out in the worst of times, we need to keep ourselves in check. We need to be the boss of us and make sure that we're not doing anything that's unsafe. So again, I think we need to reevaluate. I need to as well, what our personal limitations are. I don't feel I went beyond those, but again, I know that I came close to going beyond those, and I would have gone beyond those if I had made poor decisions or gone further on down the road in some of those situations and kept pushing myself to get there, you know, that get there-itis. So know your limitations as well. They could be much less than mine. They could be more than mine, but know what they are and be honest with yourself and be willing to stick to that in these situations. Okay. The next one, be a no person. You've heard to be a yes person, right? You know, just say yes to everything. There is even that movie, Yes Man, which I think is a hilarious movie. But be a no person. As the pilot in command, you need to have the ability to say no. You need to have the ability to turn around. You need to have the ability to not fly that day. You need to be in control of those decisions and be willing to say no. Have the gumption to say no, okay? The guts to say no. And I think that kind of stands on its own, kind of makes sense. So the last one, okay? This is very important and kind of goes into everything, is enjoy the journey. You need to enjoy the journey, and you also need to learn from the journey. And I think part of learning is enjoying the journey, but enjoy the journey, enjoy what you're doing. And if you ever find yourself not enjoying what you're doing, maybe you stretch yourself beyond your limits, or maybe this is just the type of flying that you don't need to do. So enjoy the journey along the way. I really enjoyed my second flight to Valdez, and I did enjoy my flight back, but I didn't enjoy my first flight, that failed attempt to get over there. It just wasn't that enjoyable, you know? And I kind of felt like as that was happening during that flight, like I'm not enjoying this, just a lot of things were happening where I said, this isn't quite right. Something's not aligning here for me, and I need to be really careful with how I think through this. So, and that had to go with a lot of the things I was seeing as well. Okay. Sometimes it's time to just call it a day and say no, if you're not enjoying it. Okay. Now that said, never give up. Always whatever situation you're in, even if you've pushed yourself beyond your limits, which I do not condone, but if somehow you made bad decisions and pushed yourself beyond your limit, never give up. Make the right decision, break the chain, get down safely, whatever you have to do, and keep flying the airplane. But again, know your limits and how to get there. So that's the wrap up. I'm going to read those off just one more time. No commentary. Never get in a situation you can't get out of. Always leave an out. There is safety in numbers as long as there are rules. Rely on other experienced pilots that you really know. Always be aware of your I'm safe checklist. With time to spare, go by air. Watch closely for the domino effect. Be brutally honest about your own limitations. Be a no person and enjoy the journey. And that is it for this content. We're going to have a couple messages here and then get into the closing messages of the show.
Join us next week for another exciting topic or interview with a great guest. All AviatorCast resources can be found at aviatorcast.com. Subscribe to AviatorCast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, and other podcast services. Did you enjoy the show? Review AviatorCast on iTunes or similar service. If your review is aired on the show, we'll send you an official AviatorCast t-shirt. As always, we'd love to hear from you. Write AviatorCast at me@aviatorcast.com to introduce yourself or to ask any questions you may have about aviation. Now, for the final release clearance, back to Chris Palmer.
All right, guys, thanks for joining me on this episode of AviatorCast. It's been my pleasure to have you here. This was a great experience for me to be able to share with all of you. If you like these types of episodes, please let me know through a review on iTunes. Again, we had that one-star review and I'm willing to put those on the air. But I'd love to hear about your feedback about the show, if you're enjoying it. And I look forward to more and new content here in the future now that things are settling down a little bit after getting my CFII. So I don't know if I told you that, but I did get my CFII, and now I can teach instruments. So Yep. Life is busy. Life is fun. There's lots of flying going on, and I hope you are working toward that end yourself. If you aren't already flying, I encourage you to keep taking the next step, keep moving forward. You'll find a way through. You know, it takes that passion, hard work, and determination, and you will get there. So again, thanks for all you do, and I look forward to seeing you the next time on AviatorCast. Until then, throttle on.